T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Herbie, let's go.
Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play. Yeah.
Football insider for 670 The Score.
We do what we do. We drive all game long.
And Fox 32.
Majority of folks here in my life do pronounce it Herron. Even like my pops, who he should know how our last name is pronounced.
And the Pac-12.
How many jobs you got?
One.
One job.
And Big Ten Sirius XM.
Whole lot of Herron out there.
Anthony Herron talking ball with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Anthony Herron joins us on Mondays at 1 o'clock to talk about the Bears and the NFL and all sorts of other stuff. He joins us, if you were on the phone, I would say he was joining us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. He's here in studio. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from in Melrose Park.
Open with some Jodeci, you said, huh?
Yeah, you know, Herbie is already starting to put his whole thing on the show.
I like it.
So,
when I called the Bayou Classic over the weekend, there was an offensive lineman, the right tackle for Southern. His name was Jodeci Harris. So the very first opportunity I got, it was like me and Charles Arbuckle called the game with Todd Harris. First opportunity we got where Jodeci Harris made a good block, said his name, we had to get into it real quick. I don't know how many. Well, watching the Bayou Classic, that demographic got it.
Right.
I think they probably got the reference on a standard college football game. Maybe a certain percentage wouldn't quite know what we were doing.
Probably why he was named that.
Exactly. You can only imagine which song was being played at the point of impact to to use a term I can get away with in the moment. The moment of truth, if you will.
Yes, that's true. What's the Bayou Classic like? Because I tuned in. I was like, oh, well, Anthony's doing that game, and I was licking my wounds from the Alabama game.
Right. Yeah.
So I flipped over and
I
watched that game, and it was really entertaining because it was kind of back and forth. But what's the whole spectacle of the Bayou Classic like?
It's a full week, man. They get it in the entire week. Every once in a while, 'cause I've been doing the game so long now for NBC Sports, where it's been a couple of times I'll go down on maybe a Tuesday and kind of spend the bulk of the week leading into it. I'll do that if I bring the family with me, but normally I'll just go the day after Thanksgiving. But taking in all the events, they got multiple parades throughout the week. There are so many folks from both fan bases, from the Southern side of things, the Grambling State side of things, all their fans that come in from various parts of the country, the Greek element of it, where everybody's representing their different fraternities and sororities. There's the step show the night before the game. There's also, what folks don't realize, the legit Battle of the Bands is also the night before the game. That's the one where they actually award winners and losers. They award winners and losers to the step show from the various Greek elements that are there represented. The halftime show of the game is really just more of a halftime show. We still call it the Battle of the Bands. They still term it the Battle of the Bands, but they don't really award a winner or loser from the halftime show that takes place at halftime of the game. But that's where the seats are as full as you're going to see for any halftime anywhere you go to for a football game. Folks might leave during the second quarter, go get some concessions, some snacks, come back. And then over the years, man, they've had some big acts that are there during, like, participating at halftime, like Chaka Khan or Dougie Fresh or – you know, kind of, you name it. Kevin Hart was out there one year. He didn't, like, perform at halftime, but was just out there kind of, you know, as a part of the spectacle of things down on the field while it was going on. So it's a really fun event to cover in a cool city, as you know, man. New Orleans is great when you get to visit and go take in the food and the sights. It's a very unique U.S. destination.
Yeah, a 3 or 4 day city, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to spend a ton of time there, and I'm a big proponent.
I put it in a similar category with Vegas. You know, very different from Vegas, but both unique U.S. cities that I don't necessarily want to live in, but I really enjoy to visit for like an extended weekend.
I'm a big proponent of telling people to go to the Garden District. And instead of, obviously, you need to do Bourbon Street once in your life.
Right. Like,
you need to see it. And there's some cool stuff down there. But do Magazine Street in the Garden District.
Okay.
Check out Magazine Street the next time that you're in New Orleans. There's a lot of interesting things over there where Peyton and and Eli grew up, you know? So, all right, so I wanted to talk to you about that. I'm glad you brought that up, but there's some other stuff that I wanted to discuss. We talked on Friday about the possibility of Akeem Hicks coming back, and now he's back. He's back in practice. He can't play until next week, and maybe it won't even matter. Maybe the Bears lose, and it doesn't matter. You say, hey, Akeem, just rest and
sit this one out.
And get ready for the rest of the season. You talked about him and his effect. I was commenting to Campy and Herbie earlier that I don't know if I've seen a hurt player be this visible for the Bears. Usually it's, you know, no one wants to catch it. So want that guy to be a ghost, then he goes away. Akeem has seemed like he has stayed front and center. Does that matter?
I think it's an interesting observation, and it feels accurate, just, you know, anecdotally. It matters because the, you know, aside from Danny Trevathan, who's also now out of the lineup, where, you know, what'd you lose it? Akeem from week five-ish, was it? And Danny in week 10, something like that. And to have two of your best playmakers is one thing, but then two of your most vocal personalities, and they help shape the personality of the Bears defense. But then for an offense that's, you know, somewhat devoid of big personalities, I think they end up enhancing the bravado of the Bears offense in a way as well, where I view Allen Robinson and Khalil Mack in a similar vein, where they're not boisterous in what they do. They're just dominant in what they do. And in a similar fashion, where there's times where Khalil Mack's getting triple teamed and everybody else is one-on-one and they're not winning, you know, Allen Robinson has that at times as well. Like, it's been good to see Anthony Miller emerge here lately for the Bears passing attack, but there's certainly been times where a lot of attention gets paid to Allen Robinson, regardless of where they move him, and you've got receivers who haven't consistently gotten separation. We've seen that improve. And so to have some of that swag, some of that bravado that's brought to the table by Hicks, by Trevathan, but specifically in this case, we're talking about Akeem, it does, I think, not only enhance the Bears defense, but when the defense plays with a certain tenor of dominance, of pushing folks around, of operating with that additional, you know, sort of that extra heartbeat that you love seeing them operate with, I do think it enhances the way the Bears offense takes the field as well. So his presence out there and his boisterous personality, I do think it makes a difference. And to me, him being there, him being willing to be so front and center, and the Bears wanting him to continue to be out there, has been a positive sign the entire time. I think that they've anticipated him returning at some point, where with the injury he had and the time in the season it took place, there could certainly be uncertainty about whether or not he was going to be able to come back.
Big Ant Heron is joining me here in studio. We're talking about the Bears. Follow him on Twitter at Big Ant Heron. When it comes to defense, I always think about offensive allocation. I think about, well, how many people am I going to have to use to block Khalil Mack? And I feel as if Akeem Hicks's presence next week, if he's the Bears win and he's ready to go physically, how that changes allocation if you're the Packers. Whereas before, you're like, okay, we're going to use two, probably three guys to stop Mack. I don't know if you can do that if Hicks is in the middle of that line.
You would hope that you can't. It'll depend on how effective he is, which that's what we don't know. That's what I'm – Matt Nagy and Chuck Pagano, I don't know how many of them know. Akeem Hicks probably doesn't know yet. Did I reference Luther Ellis, one of my old Lions teammates who played –
We talked a little bit about this on Friday.
Yeah, he basically played with one arm for a little while, and he was able to be – he wasn't Luther, he wasn't his old self, but he was able to be fairly effective at times, and it still made a big difference. If Akeem Hicks can still be a guy that opponents need to pay extra attention to – at least even if he can be a guy that just gets penetration, perhaps the one arm, if the left arm doesn't necessarily allow him to be as violent with that side of his body to disengage from blocks and get in a position where he makes plays. But if he can still find a way just to penetrate, and, you know, without going into the weeds of levers and how you utilize them for penetration, but if he can still get it to where he's ripping through a gap or getting skinny to penetrate, just using his force, and if it's all generated mainly from lower body power and then getting some shoulder turn, there's still ways that he can be an effective part of pushing the pocket, while if he gets washed by the quarterback but ends up flushing him, then that's still something the pass protection would have to pay extra attention to. It's just a matter of how healthy is that arm to potentially allow him to get perhaps an initial club on the defender. And that, as much as anything, would likely be, and I, you know, I've never fully dislocated my elbow before. I've subluxed it and had to play in a harness on that arm before. The most painful move for him to make is one of the ones that he's most effective with, is that initial club move where you're swinging your arm to unweight the blocker and then bringing your other lever through, whether you're bringing it over the top with a swim or through underneath with a rip move. And if he can't necessarily be very effective or violent with the club because of all the shock that runs through the elbow, and if it just causes too much pain, then he'll have to figure out what essentially his off-speed pitch is to be able to still be effective while using that left arm in some capacity.
Can the off-speed pitch be changing the way that you do it? Like, if you're right-handed, does the club arm now become the left arm? Is that possible? Is that something that has to be natural, or can you relearn basically how to pass rush that way?
It certainly can be still effective if most naturally, if it's a move that you've already been effective with, because he hasn't been in a position to attempt to really practice that throughout this time that he hasn't been able to be on the field. He is a guy who, now, I think I've mentioned to you before, or maybe I was mentioning to Dan and Connor, Akeem Hicks is, his film, his tape is not always just mechanically or technically what you would teach as just kind of clinic-worthy tape for defensive tackle play. He doesn't always line up with the hand down that you would teach. Like, maybe he's got his right hand down when he's hitting a blocking surface towards the left, or, you know, he'll pass rush with the opposite hand down at times. There's not things, or even the way he hits blocks. Sometimes he'll put his shoulder into a blocker as opposed to going full hat and hands with the hand placement inside. So there are imperfections just to his technique on a fairly regular basis, but he is, not only is this, he's a massive kind of mountain of a man, he has such power, such force that he brings, but he plays with such energy, and then there's things that he is very technically proficient with, even though if he plays a little high at times, or if he doesn't have the perfect hand placement at times, there's a lot of guys who are imperfect with their technique that still find a way to get away with that, whereas an Aaron Donald, per se, when Aaron Donald rushes with power, it's normally when he's got the perfect hat and hands, like a triangular position where his hands are inside, he's unweighting a blocker, getting under them, pressing the guy away. Because Aaron Donald is smaller in stature, and so for him, being technically sound is a much bigger deal, because he's not just going to be able to sort of hulk someone, you know, to get their leverage up like an Akeem Hicks could. So the point I'm making with that is that because he's not sort of your traditionally technically sound guy with all the techniques that he uses, there are things that may be more difficult for him to adjust, and perhaps his technique, his footwork, his hand placement will have to be that much more proficient because he's playing, or when he gets back into the lineup, because he'll be playing through an injury. So that'll be an interesting sort of chess match to watch, how Akeem Hicks can figure out a way to be effective and how the Bears utilize him. You know, perhaps he's not even a first and second down guy consistently, because your hand placement and your leverage and those things that require power and torquing of your limbs and your joints, that can put additional stress on a joint that's obviously not going to be 100% when he returns to the field. So maybe he's a sub-package guy in a lot of situations where perhaps you can get away with just focusing on penetration, and you're not necessarily going to put your linebackers in a bind if you allow an offensive lineman to run through that left arm because you can't as effectively hit that blocking surface to stop them, you know, if they're going to scoop or double team you to get up to the next level. There's a lot of things that could still work really well. I think it'll depend on how the Bears deploy him. And, of course, goes without saying, just how healthy he actually is when he steps back out there.
Anthony Herron joining me here in studio. Bears versus Cowboys this week. The Cowboys offensive line, they're kind of known as being one of the bigger, more talented offensive lines in the NFL. When you look at them on tape, what do you see?
I see a crew that's been a bit banged up. They've had some injuries out at the tackle position and more recently on the interior of their offensive line. They've still been good. They've still played at a high level this season for the most part. When they've in recent weeks had some struggles, it's when they haven't gotten the run game going with Zeke Elliott and haven't been able to set Dak Prescott up with some play action opportunities. Now, Dak plays the game at a high enough level where the Cowboys are going to pay him and it's going to make sense. But the offensive line isn't mowing folks off the ball in the manner that they have in the past. And Zeke, he looks to me like a guy who isn't necessarily hitting the holes with the ferocity that he perhaps did when he was a little bit younger. Is that because he didn't have the preseason? Is it, you know, because he's, you know, entered the season not in 100% shape, whatever it is, he doesn't seem to me to be a guy who's running with the same type of suddenness that he had earlier in his career. So I think it's combined with the offensive line not necessarily consistently opening those gaping holes. And Zeke, I don't think he's necessarily breaking tackles and hitting, you know, impacting tacklers with the same type of energy, the same type of force that he did in the past. And thus, he's not extending those yards after contact like he was able to do at different points. And we'll see how that ends up materializing. He's still been fine. I think the offensive line has been above average. It's been inconsistent, though, just like, you know, Dak has been inconsistent when they've played against teams with winning records. And if they can't set up that play action for Dak, then it's about being in predictable situations for him as a quarterback. If the protection breaks down, he extends the play well. But whether or not you can keep them in those predictable downs and distances, I think, will indicate whether or not, as a player from the quarterback position who's protected the ball really well throughout his career, can you put them into predictable downs and distances where now you can heat up that offensive line and now your secondary, especially your safety position with good ball skills, can perhaps try to get a bead on where Dak's going to deliver it because he's not necessarily in a position where play action will be as effective for him.
We talked on Friday about how well Mitch played, and, you know, him versus man. Like, I roll with Mitch if defenses are going to play man. I suspect that the Cowboys are not going to do that as their primary defense. So what things did you learn? Is there anything that you learned from Mitch that can translate from a defense that primarily played man to one that might not do that?
To me, even when Mitch faces zone coverage, it's incumbent upon the Bears to find ample moments to simplify the reads for him, and that's via the movement of the pocket. I've been talking about it so much since the early portion of the season, and we've seen in recent weeks Matt Nagy do more of that and stick with it in the game, as importantly as anything, to be willing to stick with the run game even when it's maybe not opening gaping holes, even if it's, all right, that first carry from our formation of the game goes for 13 yards, then we're not going to go back to it for a while because it was ineffective for a couple of snaps in a row. I feel like in recent weeks, Matt Nagy has been more willing to not only stick with the run game and be more stubborn with that, but also to keep Mitch on the move. And it gives him that run-pass option. It gives him the opportunity to get outside the pocket, cut down what he has to read from a coverage standpoint, cut down the passing angle for what can be inconsistent accuracy for him at times. When you're outside the pocket and does throw well on the move, then there's less you're thinking about. The less cloudy Mitch's brain is, the more effective he becomes. And there were times, like we were talking about last week, where Detroit certainly did mix in more zone than they did, but the problem was the Lions' pass rush wasn't getting home. So it gave Mitch the opportunity, the time to somewhat methodically work his way through his progressions and still be accurate in doing that because he wasn't under duress. Dallas certainly has a much better pass rush than the Lions do, and that's where it'll definitely behoove Matt Nagy, and we'll see. Cornelius Lucas, his name wasn't really called the other day. He had some nice crack toss blocks where you got the tight end logging, the edge defender. He's rolling around out in space looking for work. It was fun to see him doing that. Overall, his name not getting called is a good thing. We'll see if Bobby Massey is out again this Thursday, and you got to go with Cornelius Lucas full time. That's where the movement of the pocket won't only protect Mitch, it'll stop a Cornelius Lucas and, frankly, a Charles Leno from potentially being exposed to pass rushers with blood in their fingertips who know it's time to hunt and that pocket is staying in the same position. You don't want that for Mitch. You don't want that for this offensive line against that Dallas pass rush.
I love talking to football guys because you guys all do the same stuff with your hands when you're talking. I've noticed this with Lance and Alex and Olin too, that you all play your position. So you go back to playing your position and you're like, yeah. So and Lance always starts like this. Like, okay, when he's right, he's linebacker, he's got both hands up and he's like, all right, so will you, and he talks about shedding a block. It's so funny to me. It makes me laugh every time because you guys are all like, you're putting yourself like back in it. Yeah, and you're like, this is what it is. Real quick,
like wearing those VR goggles.
Yeah. This is in your purview because you cover the Pac-12. Chris Peterson announced that he's stepping down from Washington. Ah, I caught you by surprise with that one.
Hell yeah. Really?
Yep. Anthony's phone is clearly getting ready to go off and be silent.
In the statement said he needs to recharge, and then the University said he's going to stay on in some sort of leadership capacity.
What?
And I believe it says his buyout, even with the extension, was only like $1.5 million.
This is one of the best coaches in college football. And I know Washington this season with all the new personnel and everything, they were just kind of meh. But, I mean, this guy between Boise State and being an OC at Oregon before that, and now Washington, all the 10-win seasons he put together. I mean, he's a game planner like very few others. He actually, Mark Helfrich, the Bears offensive coordinator, studied under Chris Peterson for a while when they worked together when they were both at Oregon also. Man, that's ginormous news. Oh, I did not know that happened. I appreciate you letting me know that. Yes, the phone is already
already a buzzing. Because I know that you have it on silent, so I'm sure that there was stuff that like's coming through as you're explaining line play to us here. all this other stuff is going on.
Huge.
So I would tell you that you should check out Big Ann Heron's Twitter feed, because I imagine if you're someone who's into college football, he's going to have some stuff on that via Twitter. Man. He's great for us here at The Score. He does a great job when he and Olin host the post show on Sundays after our regular post-game show is over. You can watch him on Fox 32 as well. I need to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about your rooting interest tonight in Monday Night Football. That's next on the
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Score. I was sitting here talking with Anthony Heron during the break about some of the jobs out in the Pac-12. You know what I was thinking about doing, Herbie? At some point, I mean, I know that college football is getting ready, is pretty much at its end right now, but we need to talk to some of our guys about rivalries. Like, I was sitting there thinking about, like, I should talk with Big Ann about Iowa-Nebraska or Iowa-Iowa State. Or, like, all of our friends that went to football schools, like, what? Because our friend Sierra Santos, like, she's flipping out over the Territorial Cup this weekend between Arizona State and Arizona. And I know what Lance is like during that week. He's a crazy person, too, about it. We should do, like, a kind of, like, podcasty type feel where we talk to all of our football people and some of our non-football people about rivalry week. I think that would be a lot of fun.
I also think it, but I think also that people, you know, when you do that Northwestern read, and sometimes I do it, people always ask me, like, why do you hate Northwestern? Saturday is why I hate Northwestern, because they're better than us. And our team, Illinois, doesn't take it serious like a rivalry. After the game, Pat's like, let me enjoy this. Yes, we beat Illinois with our fourth-string quarterback, baby. I don't like the man, but he has the right mindset.
You know, I was watching, there were people who got mad at me for saying that I felt like Saturday was a step backwards for the Illini program. And It was. Like, after you got that sixth win, people were really excited, and you had a chance to split those last two games and end up with seven. And most people thought, looking at the season that Northwestern has had this year, and you go, oh, well, Illinois will get their seventh win. I was really disappointed at people not showing up to the game. And I'm not usually that guy. I usually don't care. It just felt like for the seniors down in Champaign, they've gone through 4 years of trash. And at the end of it, they get this bowl game. And for the rivalry game against Northwestern, there was nobody there.
Well, there's always a person to cape for the Illini football program. They're like, oh, it was cold that day. Yeah, November in Illinois. It's going to be cold.
You know where else it was cold? In Minnesota.
Exactly.
It was snowing.
And they rode the boat, even though they got rode.
And you know where else it was cold and rainy and snowy? In Ann Arbor. And for that rivalry game, they packed the house. Like, and there are people like, oh, well, folks are at the state title games. I'm like, really? That's what you're on? That's the thing?
There's always an excuse for Illinois football for why they're not a better program, why they don't have great attendance, all these things. I think they should be held to the standard that they should be. They should be a top Big Ten team. Not the top, but top seven.
Sure.
Minimum. And attendance, what else are you doing in Champaign?
Not a lot.
I mean, seriously.
Not a lot. Being married into a family who lives not far from the stadium, not a lot.
And then the people say, well, the kids were away for Thanksgiving. Come back. It's a real game. It's a game to catapult you to the next level, to the offseason and to the bowl practices. Now, as a person who loves the Illini, I'm thinking, good, not great season. Three losses to teams that you can't explain. You lost to Eastern Michigan at the house. You lost to Nebraska at the house when you had a 14-point lead. And you lost to Northwestern. Didn't lose to Northwestern. You got housed by Northwestern and their fourth-string quarterback. Then they fired their offensive coordinator the next day after getting 300 yards of offense, of rushing.
Well, the capes are already out. Yeah, Michigan, Illinois, same thing. Get out of here. How about Minnesota? Nothing, right? You got nothing from Minnesota, though, right? P.J. Fleck walked in there, what, 2 years ago? 3 years ago? And look at what he's built the program up to be. I was just shocked.
Apparently, there's no Thanksgiving break for Michigan or Minnesota.
You can't compare them to Michigan, even though you hear Illinois people all the damn time talk about how proud their programs are, whether it's basketball or football. I'm just saying that there was an opportunity to put your money where your mouth was, and you didn't. And now you're kind of using every excuse to not do that. I just felt like for people that talked about that program being back, like having the win against Wisconsin being back, that it was really sad. Like when they went to the game, I saw it because you know how they have the opening where the broadcasters are kind of sitting with their back to the stadium. Now, those are usually recorded really early. So I'm sitting there like, okay, that was recorded probably at 9:30 in the morning. Obviously, there are not a lot of people there. And then they did the pullout once the game was getting ready to kick off. And I was like, wow, that's messed up. It would have been nice to see those seniors get, for what they've put up with, it would have been nice for them to get kind of a great crowd for that game, and then to get housed. And that was the other thing. When I brought it up about it being a step backwards, there are people like, well, Illinois got injuries. Northwestern's on its fourth quarterback, and they're the worst team in the league. And they came in there and stomped a mud hole in your ass. And it's like, oh, well, you know, there's always this. The people just doing math. Just be like, no, they messed up. They weren't good. We've been giving a lot of praise to University of Illinois over the last few weeks. And Lovey, they weren't ready to play on Saturday. And that's unfortunate. It's an unfortunate end to a very good season for them.
As the texter points out, Indiana-Purdue, it was a slog there too. But people showed up for the old oaken bucket.
Right. That's a better comp for all the people like, well, Minnesota's a top 25 team. Yeah, but they weren't before PJ got there.
So does this hurt Herb's fan win percentage? Because, boy, when he was off, they were starting to do some things. And now that Herb's back on.
I've always been on, Rick. I've never been off.
Are you going to the bowl game?
I am. I promised myself on Twitter that I have to go to the bowl game. Now, they're costing me money if it's going to be in Santa Clara. If it's in New York or Detroit, I'm smooth.
You'd rather be in Detroit than New York.
Yeah, I mean, you can drive there.
No, I can drive
the hell back, too.
And you're inside.
Nah, I don't really care about that.
I mean,
I really don't get cold.
I mean, clearly Illinois fans care about stuff like that. God forbid there's a little bit of rain.
I went to the Iowa game in Iowa City. It was like 35.
Oh, so that loss is on your fan win-loss percentage?
Like the two huge wins this year, I literally did not watch a second of. One, I was taking my mom out for her breakfast or for birthday. And then the Michigan State one, I was in Fort Lauderdale. So I didn't watch that one at all either. I just watched that one via Twitter and just reacting via other people's reactions.
Well, that concludes our Illinois conversation for today.
The year.
And maybe for the if they win the bowl game, I'm rooting for them in the bowl game. I'd like to see Lovey succeed. It's a real slap. Does Northwestern like, hey, we're Northwestern and we're gonna come and kick your ass for you. How about that? How about you enjoy this ass whooping? That we are going, even though our team's trash this year, we're going to come down here. We're going to do some things. And Pat Fitzgerald, you're right. He was like, hey, go Cats. Speaking of which, the bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Northwestern Basketball hosts number 3 Michigan State at the new Welsh Ryan Arena on December 18. Tip-off is set for 7 p.m. Tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now, nusports.com. I promise you Bears playoff talk. I'll do that next here on The Score. Since we were talking about college football, congratulations to Illinois State for advancing in the playoffs. Our guy Brock Spack doing work.
I can one-up you.
No, I'm going to one-up myself. Also, congratulations to North Central, who beat powerhouse Mount Union in what was a – was that game like 58-55 or something like that? So congratulations to those teams and their fan base is showing up for games. By the way, if you want the Bears in the playoffs for at least the next 2 weeks, you're a Seattle Seahawks fan. Seattle's got the Vikings tonight on Monday Night Football. So you're rooting for them because you can catch Minnesota and pass them. And they're still in your schedule and you'd have a tiebreaker. The other reason why you're a Seattle Seahawks fan for the next 2 weeks is because they play the Rams next week. So you need them to also beat the Rams because they hold the tiebreaker over you. So you're a Seahawks fan for the next 2 weeks if you want the Bears in the playoffs. I'll talk McNeil and Parkins about the Bears and all sorts of other stuff coming up next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.